including Sid Straw and Peter Holsapple, will be featured in concert from Arts at St. Anne's in Brooklyn next Saturday, May 8th, at 1 p.m. on the Piper in the Meadow Straying.
There are songs I cannot hear without a sense of desolation. Cause you left me a stranger to myself.
So tune in Saturday, May 8th at 1 p.m. for Peter Blegvad in concert on WBAI in New York.
And good night. Dave Tram, David Hofstra, Peter Holsapple, Sid Straw, and myself. Thanks a lot.
It's 10 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook. A very warm welcome to everybody. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. The program is Off the Hook, where all kinds of bizarre things are going on in the world of technology and the world of real life as well. We have some important news. Next week we won't be here. However, we will be here in a sense. And if you tune in, you'll find out exactly what we mean by that. Probably one of the most unusual things we've ever done. But first things first, let's update people on the news, what's been going on, what's been happening, and then we'll have some fun tales of the latest from New York Telephone, and of course, your listener phone calls, because we're here live tonight, so get your dialing fingers ready at 212-279-3400. We'll be taking calls a little bit later on. This, out of today's Newsday, Suffolk County's long overdue $15.9 million criminal justice computer system has failed a new test. This one run by the firm that built it, which showed that even with a limited number of dispatchers, the system failed to display critical emergency information fast enough. The function was not there. That according to County Executive Assistant John Gallagher, who said yesterday the performance was abysmal. The test, which started in mid-April, was run by Unisys Corporation to demonstrate how the system's computer-aided dispatch, a critical component that handles emergency response to 911 calls, would work in handling 300 police, rescue, and fire incidents in a single hour. When two-thirds of the 86 needed computers, terminals for dispatches were put into operation, county officials say the average response time for getting critical information displayed on computer screens was 6.8 seconds. Imagine that in an emergency being asked, can you wait 6.8 seconds while we figure out where you are? Yeah, well, the 3.5 second standard is what is considered normal under this particular contract. Officials say the computers were also slow to respond to dispatchers on what patrol cars were available or the appropriate fire department to which a call should be routed. Efforts to correct the problem by adding computer memory and changing the computer program only made things worse in a follow-up test on Thursday. That's true. A third phase involving use of 86 computer terminals. The full number of active users of the dispatching system was canceled because of problems in the most recent tests. Incredible. It just keeps getting worse. Well, in case you think things can't get any worse, this story, datelined April 27th, out of Beijing. The first person in China to be convicted of embezzling bank funds by computer has been executed. A little sobering warning there to some of you who might be thinking of playing with technology in ways you shouldn't. It could be in China. Or China could come here. Things change every day, you know. What's illegal one day becomes legal the next. What's technologically infeasible one day is normal the next. You can't afford to sleep, you know. Well, here's a story about a photocopier. A sophisticated photocopier. It's got an onboard computer. It constantly monitors and controls all aspects of the photocopier's operation and maintenance. The sorter trays on this machine are driven up and down by servo motors to collate the output. Under normal operation, the tray would never be directed by the computer to raise beyond a certain height. However, should there be a problem? Two sensors were placed at both limits of the tray's movement to detect a possible overrun. In keeping with the integrated nature of this copier, sensors were of course not wired directly into the servo motors, but instead were monitored by the main computer. Well, it's all fine and dandy. What does it mean? According to Ian Staines, who posted this from Canada onto the Risks Digest on the internet, "Today I watched the copier attempt to recover from an interrupted print job. In error, it failed to note the starting position of the sorter tray and directed the servo motors to move the tray upwards. Unfortunately, there did not appear to be a software check in the recover routine to check the overrun sensors. The tray crashed upwards off its rails, damaging several components in the process." My, my. Well, even talking about this particular incident, or possible incident, on this radio program over the past couple of months, in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch of April 22nd, there was an article about a local man who had been convicted of growing marijuana for resale. His defense was primarily related to using it to treat his asthma, but what was far more interesting was the way he was originally arrested. According to the story, he first came to the attention of the authorities because he was using substantially more electricity than his neighbors. They then utilized an airborne infrared detector to infer that he had a substantial number of grow lamps in his attic. Based on this, they were able to obtain a search warrant and discovered his crop of 150 plants. It would be interesting to know if the utilities actually have routines that identify unusual customers and routinely report this to the authorities, or if there is some other reason that this man came to the attention of the authorities. That comes from J. Philip Miller, Professor, Division of Biostatistics in St. Louis, Missouri, also from the Risk Digest. And, you know, there's been talk of the Clipper chip all over the place, and that is something we're going to be talking about tonight. We'll be talking about it in future weeks. We'll be talking about it until it either dies or until it becomes law. Clipper chip, supposedly the way of protecting all of us from listening ears by providing a way of encrypting data. But you know, there's a lot of people that feel maybe it's not just a good idea to have the government in charge of our privacy. Well, this is a short essay from Bill Campbell, "The Real Risk of the Clipper Chip." And he says, "Proponents slash apologists for the chip make, as I see it, one and only one valid point. Use of the chip will protect me against the casual eavesdropper better than no encryption at all. Now, keep in mind, we've demonstrated this in past programs, that there is no encryption at all right now on cellular telephones. One of the things that the Clipper chip is supposed to address is that particular problem and make our particular phone conversations more private by encrypting them. Sounds like a great idea. What could possibly be wrong with that? Well, let's listen to this particular opinion. I fear, however, that unless something high profile is done, and done quickly, the real risk associated with this technology policy will be born to fruition. To wit, the American public is by and large profoundly ignorant of technical stuff, that's with the exception of the BII audience, of course, and often very indifferent about protecting their own constitutional rights. This same gullible public may very easily be convinced by the government that not only is their privacy protected from their nosy neighbor, but also from unlawful invasion by law enforcement and or other more determined individuals and organizations. This is what I see as the real risk of Clipper. There are dozens, perhaps hundreds, of commercial, criminal, and governmental entities with access to government resources who would not hesitate for a moment to violate my rights if they found it expedient to do so. These individuals and organizations have demonstrated beyond question that they are not constrained by legal or ethical considerations, and, as been suggested in a number of other postings, the technology employed by Clipper will probably not even pose so much as an inconvenience to a determined adversary. To suggest otherwise is, at best, profoundly naive. I believe that as a society, we have at least two challenges with respect to addressing this public gullibility. One, we need to find some way to dispel the assumption held by many that the government ultimately acts with the best interests of the public in mind. This is unmitigated hogwash. Government, by its very nature, is a consumer, not a producer. Left to its own, government will progressively consume more and more of a nation's productivity until the nation finally collapses under the weight of its inevitably oppressive and corrupt government, as in the Soviet Union. This can only be prevented by an informed and active citizenry. And two, we need to find a way to effectively educate the public about specific threats to our freedom and prosperity from government actions, such as the cripple chip, as he calls it, as these things arise. Here's an interesting flip side to all of this. It comes out of Australia. Something just occurred over there, actually on the 28th of April. The federal government has overridden the objections of law enforcement agencies and allowed Telecom and Optus to start new digital mobile phone networks which are so secure that conversations can escape officially authorized telephone bugging. While law enforcement agencies can still intercept calls from mobile phones to an ordinary phone, calls from one digital mobile phone to another cannot be tapped. The government agreed to waive the bugging requirement, originally a condition of the mobile phone network license. And that was only a couple of weeks ago, after strong pressure from both carriers to begin their services without providing technology to allow law enforcement agencies to listen into conversations. The changes to the system to allow official bugging will take up to 2 years to complete and will cost more than $25 million, a cost which the government has agreed to bear. The government's waiving of the bugging requirement was made despite strong opposition from law enforcement agencies who wanted the start of the new digital mobile phone networks delayed until there was technology available to allow conversations conducted on these networks to be intercepted. The law enforcement agencies argued that once criminals and others who had reason to avoid officially authorized interceptions of their telephone conversations became aware of the loopholes in the new system, they would exploit it. Referring to the fact that most mobile phone calls are to fixed phones attached to the ordinary telephone network, Optus Chief Operating Officer Mr. Ian Boatman said that most calls carried on the network would be interceptable by any security agency. And you know, that's what it comes down to. There's always a way. You know, if you suspect somebody is a criminal, there's always a way of finding out. There's always a way of spying. And just because you can't listen to particular conversations, particular airborne digital conversations that are encrypted, doesn't mean you can never find out that the person is, in fact, up to something. I mean, if you could monitor brain waves, wouldn't that be wonderful? Wouldn't it be great if you could read people's thoughts and realize that they were criminals of some sort? And imagine, if you will, imagine that we had that capability, that for some reason law enforcement people had the capability to read our brain waves for the past, say, 50 years, and, you know, some bleeding heart organization like the ACLU suddenly managed to win a court case and say, you know, that's not right, and stop doing that. Stop reading our brains, okay? And as of tomorrow, no more brain wave reading is allowed. Now imagine the uproar that law enforcement agencies would be conducting right now to say, look, how can we possibly catch criminals if we can't read their brains? They'll be able to think with impunity. They'll be able to talk to other people and plan things without our knowing their every move. Now maybe we should look at cellular phone calls and other forms of communication as possibly something that should be private. Something that maybe shouldn't be eavesdropped into. And if you really believe somebody is a criminal, well, is that the only way you can find out for sure? I mean, criminals do criminal things. Just seems that as we move into the 90s, there are more and more ways of listening in. There's electronic mail. I mean, you couldn't open up people's mail before, but now you can. Now you can do it without being traced. Cellular phone calls. You can just tune in to a radio now. Didn't used to be able to do that. Used to have to lug heavy equipment into a basement somewhere and tap into a phone line. It's just becoming easier and easier. Maybe it should be becoming harder, you know? Not easier. Or at least staying the same. Well, that's one way of looking at it, and I'd be curious as to what those of you out there, if you agree with that particular way of looking at it, that is a realistic way. You got to look at things from a human point of view. And I think what we're seeing with the advent of computers, advent of networks and telephone communications, video communications, we're seeing kind of an instinctive reaction where people want to remain private. They want to be able to encrypt the messages they send to each other. They want to not be watched at every step of the way. And that's something that we as individuals demand. So to go against that is unnatural, in my opinion, anyway. Well, here's a final note to end on, for those of you that have not gotten your fill of cynicism today. You know, if you get bombarded with junk mail and junk phone calls and things like that, you can ask not to have that happen. We live in such a wonderful society that there is a safe harbor for people like us that don't like to be constantly barraged with wonderful vacation offers and fabulous prizes and once-in-a-lifetime opportunities and investments and things like that, you know? Sometimes we just want to live our solitary lives. And so for people like us, for these misfits, we can send in our names and be put on a list. That's right, a list of people that don't want to get phone calls and letters and things like that. Now, that in itself should tell you that something is fundamentally wrong, but if that's not enough, listen to this. The Direct Marketing Association maintains a database listing of people that prefer not to receive unsolicited marketing material. This contributor, Rich Rosenbaum, says, I've had my name and address added to this list, hoping it would reduce my mail. It seems to have had just the opposite effect recently. I just received a mailing from Sears that begins, because you have requested through the Direct Marketing Association not to receive various solicitations through the mail, ... Yeah, that's where we stand today, folks. Well, this is Off the Hook. Glad you could join us. We have an important announcement. We might as well get to that important announcement right now. So without any further ado, let's listen to this important announcement, and we'll be back with some important news about New York Telephone. And, of course, we'll be taking your phone calls, which New York Telephone will play a part in. This is Emmanuel Goldstein from Off the Hook, inviting you to join us for a special program this Wednesday, May 12th, from 9 a.m. until 12 noon, where we ask if things can get much worse as the marriage of high technology and low intelligence continues. We'll be talking about computers, telephones, consumer ripoffs, and, of course, Big Brother. Tune in this Wednesday from 9 a.m. until 12 noon, only on WBAI 99.5 FM. Ah, yes, there's our dial tone. And that means we're going to be exploring the phone network in just a couple of seconds. This has been... I don't know how we're going to get up at 9 in the morning, just to be honest. I don't understand how we're going to do that, but we're going to do it because we care about this place and we want to reach all kinds of people. So it's 3 hours next week. Incredible. And we won't be here at this time next week because we're only human, you know. But this has been an incredible week for New York Telephone. New York Telephone has outdone themselves this week. And I feel it's fair to point out when somebody has gone to that extra effort, you know, to really excel in whatever it is that they do. And this week, New York Telephone has gone above and beyond the call. And I just simply cannot say that enough. Now, a lot of it revolves around the phone bill that I just got. Now, we've been talking about the new features here at this radio station, new features that have been introduced in many parts of the area, caller ID, phone smart, call return, you know, all that kind of thing. And one thing that we said on this radio station was that for the next 2 months, until June 15th, for those areas that are known as sellout areas, according to New York Telephone, that features such as caller ID were free, no charge. Well, guess what? There is a charge. New York Telephone, on two separate occasions, and I've got this on tape, by the way, said to me that there was no charge for the next 2 months because this is a sellout location, and you're encouraged to test out the system and play with it all you want. Well, I got a phone bill and all these caller ID charges for every single line that we've got coming into the office shows up on the bill. It's the most incredible thing, and of course, I got that wiped away immediately, but I just can't believe how they can resort to that kind of tactic. And if it's not a tactic, how they can have such ignorance running around where they're saying things that are so obviously not true. When you ask them, are you sure? Are you sure there is no charge? No, there's no charge. And you ask a second person, and they say there's no charge, and then there turns out to be a charge. You know, it's just, what are these people doing? You have to wonder. That's only one thing. Every single person in the area has been asked a question. They've been asked, do you want to have your phone number blocked or do you want to have your phone number sent when you make a telephone call? For those people that have caller ID boxes, do you want them to be able to see your telephone number? Now, in something that I consider to be wrong, the default is yes. The default is yes, send my telephone number, even though for all the past decades of phone service, we have not been sending our phone number to people that we call. It's just assumed that we all want to do that now. So if you don't answer the question, your phone number will be sent. If you do answer the question, your phone number may or may not be sent. And it doesn't really have all that much to do with what you say. I found that out because I was very explicit with what I wanted, what lines I wanted to have the phone number sent, and what lines I did not want to have the phone number sent. And I have to say, just about every single one of these got flip-flopped somehow so that a number was sent on one, a number wasn't sent on the other. It was all completely botched. And the only way you can find out if it's completely botched is to have a caller ID box so you can see for yourself. Now imagine, if you're out there now, and you've asked for your number to be blocked, you don't want to send your phone number every time you make a phone call. Well, how do you know? How do you know that your phone number is not being sent? You don't. New York Telephone offers no such way of checking. And you know what's funny? when I called up to complain about this, they were looking at their computer screen. They looked at their computer screen and they said, well, you know, on the computer it says that you have all call blocking and your number should not be sent, but it's not working. It's not working. The computer says it's working, but in real life it's not. It's really not. So if you just call up and ask them, they're going to tell you one thing, but in reality something else will be happening. So maybe the solution is for everybody to go out and get caller ID and pay the phone company $6.50 a month plus installation so that you can check to make sure they're doing their job. I'm sure they'd like that. That was only one of many things. There were all kinds of collect third number charges. And, you know, you might say, okay, there's people making all these weird phone calls and charging them to 2600 Magazine. Because they just think they can get away with that, and because everybody keeps making these crazy phone calls from chemical banks and charging them to third numbers and things like that. But, you know, for 6 months now, we've been telling the phone company, don't allow any third number calls to go through. And you'd think it would be a simple matter for them to not allow it to happen. But no. The computer says that the phone line is not supposed to accept third number billing, but, you know, it just keeps happening. We don't understand it. They don't understand it. It's their system, and they don't understand it. I said, well, maybe we can have some people infiltrate the computer system and fix it, you know, make it work the way it's supposed to work. Because obviously they have more of an understanding as to how the system works than you fellas do. Suggestion was not well taken, but I maintain that... you know, good God-fearing Americans have to do something. Oh, I don't know. And that's not all. That's not all. It never ends. I could go on for another hour. Do you know they installed an 800 number for me? They just felt, I guess, I needed an 800 number, and they just put it on my phone bill. I opened up my phone bill, and there's an 800 number that I never heard of going to my phone number. I tell you, the things that the phone company does for you just it boggles the imagination. Well, fiber optic is here, and I'm sure nothing the phone company does boggles your imagination, does it?
No, certainly not.
Well, now, I've got something here, though, that I think you might like, and I think listeners might like. We do have some new features that have been installed. We have different recordings that you will get when you access these things, when you make certain mistakes or do all kinds of assorted actions. Now, to go over these... Rather quickly. Star 70 is something that you would dial to turn off call waiting, and you get that little stutter dial tone. Now, star 67, you also get a stutter dial tone, but that's to turn off sending your phone number down to caller ID, or to turn it on if you've already turned it off, if that's not getting too complicated. Now, what's interesting about these two stutter dial tones is that the second one, the one to block your number or unblock your number, whichever, has a technical problem with it. Maybe you could describe that a little better for the listeners.
Well, it's a bit specific, I guess. It's
something that people would notice, but they wouldn't know why it was happening.
Okay, but you and I both are on a AT&T 5ESS, which is, this is pretty much specific to those, I guess. But you'll notice that, well, you modem users out there who like dialing quickly, if you notice, if you dial star 70 before your telephone number that you're calling, most people, maybe just out of force of habit, would stick a couple of commas in there to pause. But you really don't need them in there on us digital switch users, at least people on 5ESSs.
Yeah, you can just dial.
You just dial straight through the stutter dial tone. Yep, it'll all go through. However, it's worth noting that people on DMS-100s don't get a stutter dial tone. They get two beeps and a dial tone. I think that's worth noting.
That is worth noting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's a sure sign if you're curious as to what type of switching equipment you have.
If you have call waiting.
Now, if you have call waiting, yes.
Because it won't work at all if you don't have call waiting.
You'll just get a recording or a reorder. And the thing is, with star 67, the stutter dial tones, star 70 will give you three stutters and then a steady tone. Star 67 gives you two stutters and a pause and then a dial tone. During that pause, it does not recognize any digits that you dial. And if you're speed dialing, like if you have a speed dial phone and you're dialing quickly, or else if you're using a modem to dial, you'll notice that you're going to be making dialing errors because it's not recognizing any digits during that short little break.
Now, I noticed this when I was, because I don't have Touchtone service, you know. I don't believe in paying for Touchtone service, but when I program my push-button phone to dial 1167 in that particular case, 1167 followed by the number, it would constantly not go through because it would dial while that little pause was going on and confuse the switch completely. Or God forbid, connect me to a wrong number entirely.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful with that. You got to wait for that that little pause. And then we're going to actually demonstrate this, and hopefully this will work. We have set up that particular demonstration line that will show us this and a bunch of other things too. So just hold on for a moment. This is really exciting and another proof of how technology can make us all happier. Puzzling, actually, is the way that the information is sent. On the caller ID box, if you are calling somebody back, all right, if you're doing a *69, you will get on your caller ID box whatever information they allow to be sent. In other words, if they have all call blocking, you will see private number show up. If they don't have all call blocking, you will see their phone number. And that's interesting. That's something I did not know before. But you will see their phone number, even though they're not technically calling you, you're calling them.
Hmm.
Now, if you're calling a busy signal, if you're doing a *66, you will always see their number, regardless of what they have, because it's assumed that you know what number it is in the first place, because you dialed it. You dialed it, and then you dialed *66 or 1166 afterwards to camp onto it. So it's not going to block the number, even if they said to block it, because you already dialed it, so you know what it is. So a couple of interesting things about caller ID, and I'm sure that we've confused a lot of people with that information, but it just had to be said, you know. You understand, right?
I thought it was pretty interesting, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's the whole telephone technology is changing in such quick and rapid ways that it's leaving a lot of people behind in the dust. It's good in some ways. It's not so good in other ways. That's something that I think we need to talk about some more. We're going to be taking phone calls now, 212-279-3400. The phone company is a wild, mysterious animal. But I'll tell you something. If you actually believe what they tell you and believe they know what they're doing, well, you know what you are?
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely.
Yeah, well, that gets the point across anyway. No time for this. Time for us to take phone calls, though. 212-279-3400. Let's see who's out there. Good evening.
Hi. I was just listening, and you were giving, like, so many star numbers. I was trying to figure out. I've never heard your show before, but what did you have a star number you could press? Let's say I just dialed a friend up in Massachusetts, and he was not home. His phone wasn't busy. He just wasn't home. Is there a star number that would keep checking it? No, I guess.
There are several things. I mean, yes, you can keep checking it, but not through a direct dial phone call that I know of. I think AT&T actually has a service like that, but you don't want to pay rates of a phone company to keep checking something when you can buy a phone that will do the same thing. There are plenty of telephones that will recognize a busy signal, hang up, and try again in a minute or so, or whatever they program it to do.
Where would I go to find out what all the star numbers are and all the extra little things like this are? I mean, do they publish a little something?
Yeah, you don't have to go anywhere. It should be in your phone book. If it's not in your phone book, there's we can tell you what virtually all of them are. You know, *70 is to block is to turn off call waiting for one call. *67 is to block your number or to send your number if you've already blocked it for all calls. *69 is to return a call. *66 is to try a busy signal again, but you have to already call the number in the first place.
Yeah.
And *89 cancels a *69. *86 cancels a *66. *57 is to trace a call, which I'm very unclear as to what exactly that does, except it does cost $1.50, and I think it's a tremendous ripoff. Am I leaving out any?
Do the other stars cost extra fees?
Well, yes. Actually, right now in my area, it's not costing anything, but in most areas it costs an outrageous amount, I think. 75 cents every time you call somebody back, which on top of the cost of the phone call, which I don't think is right at all. It should be changed. Unless you get a monthly fee, which is something like $4 or $5.
Okay, I didn't understand *70. How does that?
All right, do you have call waiting?
Yes, I do.
Okay, if you wanted to turn off call waiting, when you picked up your phone, you could just dial *70, and you'd hear a stutter dial tone, and people would get a busy signal if they tried to call you. If you had three-way, you could flash off to another dial tone now and dial it. And it would turn off your call waiting.
Could I do that while I was talking to somebody? Like let's say you and I were talking right now, and I pushed *70, would it turn it off?
No, you have to have three-way in order to be able to do that. Do you have three-way?
No.
Okay, you need three-way in order to get that second dial tone to be able to flash. You can't just dial *70 now. You have to get a dial tone to do it. So the only way you could do it would be at the beginning of the phone call.
Because when you were mentioning these numbers before, I tried pushing *70 on my phone, and I got not those code sounds that you were talking about on the radio, but I got the phone, like I was calling somebody. It just started ringing.
It was probably an error message of some sort.
I didn't hang out to find out who was going to answer.
Well, no one's going to answer. Nobody has the number *70, but I would check it out and see what.
I pushed *70 and I got like I was trying to call somebody. I wasn't trying to call anybody, so I hung up.
Now you do have call waiting.
Yes, I do.
Okay, what?
Other line or something? I don't know.
Do you know what kind of a switch you're served by?
Oh, I don't know.
What area of the country are you in?
I'm in 908 over
908
here
in Jersey.
You
okay.
Have to pay for it.
I also pushed
New Jersey
has to pay for it.
Oh, boy. Yeah, New Jersey has a real racket going. New Jersey Bell charges you for *70.
Oh, well, I'm glad I didn't wait till it picked up.
Well, no, I mean, they won't let you do it, and you can't. I don't know what they charge you for this, but you have to pay for the service in order to be able to dial those three numbers.
Oh, well, maybe that's why it was only ringing or something?
Yeah.
They would have given a recording.
Yeah, we'd give you a recording saying, sorry, you gotta pay the ransom before we can release the numbers.
And when I did *67, it started ringing also.
Uh-huh.
I haven't tried the other stars yet.
Well, yeah, *67 will ring because New Jersey doesn't have blocking. New Jersey is a real fascist state. Nothing against the people who live there, but, I mean, I can't believe the things the phone company gets away with there.
Well, that's
really
because
can't. They're
here.
Yeah, I know. That's because that's where it all started.
Right. There's about five different locations where AT&T is. I don't know if you've ever been up to Murray Hill, but it looks like
a
monastery up
there. I'm there quite a bit, in fact.
Yes, it's quite an incredible
place.
I went through there a few years ago when I was touring the art collection alone. It must be worth billions of dollars.
Uh-huh.
So they have it hanging on the walls up there.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for those answers. If I have any more, I'll call back.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Take care.
That's a good example of some of the things that, I mean, I was surprised. Yeah, the phone company charges. Some phone companies charge for things that other phone companies don't. That alone should tell you that it's wrong. You know, shouldn't it cost the same everywhere? Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I have two questions, if I can. The first one is I just had to get my cellular phone, reprogrammed to a different number because someone... I guess programmed theirs to my number and started using my account.
Yeah, it's a common way of defrauding cellular phone companies. Yes.
Is there any way to protect yourself against that?
Not right now. There's no way of not listening in, and that includes the data that gets transmitted as well, which has your special code numbers and all that. So no, there's no protection at all for cellular phone people, and you know, even if there was protection against that, we'd still be able to listen to you on the scanner, and we'd be able to tell exactly what you were saying.
Right, and I was wondering if someone actually when they did that, what if there are two cellular phones on at one time programmed with the same number? Does the network know that?
I don't think that's possible, is it?
Yeah, of course it is.
Is it possible for the same area?
Yeah, of course it is, and both phones would be in use at the same time. I mean, the account would be in use by two separate phones.
I see.
It's called stealing service.
Right, both stealing service. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were asking, is there a legitimate way for that to happen?
No, I was asking, actually, when they did it, if that would show up, or if that would just, you know, they could just be driving right next to me using my account.
Yeah, they just get your ESN number.
Yeah.
When it gets transmitted, when you pick up the phone.
Okay.
What people do is they camp out on the highway and they just capture all the ESN numbers as they go by in the cars.
Yeah.
It's very easy.
Yeah. Okay. The second question was, if you could, I heard a rumor tonight about Prodigy, that when Prodigy connects to you and updates your software, it checks out your directories and it uploads some information from your hard drive.
All right,
and there's some loss.
That's an old story. The stage.dat file, and just to cut it short, it's unfounded. Really is. They're not up to something, but it does show that a lot of people don't really know how their computers are being accessed and what's being done to them.
Yeah.
So it's something to know about, but we've talked about that at great length, and just don't want to get into it anymore.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to another telephone call. Good evening.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I have a report that may be old news, but I was in New Orleans a couple of months ago and was told by a systems person down there that the phone company has a systems for allocating charges that are done by fraud to other numbers that make similar calls.
All right, you're going to have to say that, I don't know, something a little closer to what we understand.
The phone company has very serious amounts of money that are charged by fraud to a business or to some other number they've gotten, okay?
All right.
Maybe thousands of dollars charged to some company by fraud. And rather than just take the hit themselves, they have a system for checking other phone accounts that make calls to similar area codes and assigning the charges to them.
Just assigning them without notifying them that they're doing this.
I thought you probably had run into this.
Well, what I know that if there's a case of fraud, for instance, and a person down the block from a payphone where all this fraud is taking place happens to call the exact same telephone number, the phone company will usually figure out that person is probably behind it. And they might surreptitiously add it to their phone bill without telling them. But to do it to something that's similar, in other words, if somebody is calling Columbia from a payphone, they'll simply add it to the person in the neighborhood that happens to call Columbia from their homes. I don't think they would do something like that. I don't think they could get away with it.
Well, apparently they are in New Orleans.
Really? Well, I'd like to hear more about that, if that is true.
Well, I don't have more details, but I thought it was worth reporting anyway, on the chance that some other listener might have more details, and perhaps I can track it down.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Well, the phone company will do all kinds of things to get what they feel is theirs. Good evening. Go ahead.
Yes, you raised an intriguing metaphor earlier, which I wanted to explore a little bit. You said, what if the government... You were talking about some kind of a search. And you said, what if the government could read somebody's brainwaves, I guess to read their minds?
Right.
And you said that was as if, like, when they took a picture of someone's house, or they got a hold of someone's utility bill and then took a picture of their house using an infrared camera and found that they had all these lamps to grow marijuana.
Right.
And that was like reading brainwaves. I think that's a very intriguing analogy. I would even extend it further to say, the way this system works is not only as if the government could read people's brainwaves to search them, but if they could also, let's suppose they could punish somebody just automatically, like by reading someone's brainwaves, as it were, or extract what taxes or what they call taxes, or that they could use such methods of surveillance or some kind of an illegal method of surveillance. I don't know how you take a picture of lamps in people's homes. You might explain a little bit about that for the purpose of politics and discrediting or blackmail. In other words, you can imagine a full range of extents where if you could just extract a punishment, let alone just evidence for a court, so you never even have to bring evidence or charges in a court. You just go straight to the punishment.
It's kind of
the way the system usually functions.
It's sort of like these new high technology traffic tickets. Have you heard about these? Where the police officer doesn't even have to witness it. It's done by machine. The machine somehow is able to tell the person was speeding and it takes a picture of their license plate, and the officer simply signs the ticket to say that he did not actually witness it, but to the best of his knowledge, it happened because the machine told him it happened. It's all automatic. There's no human intervention needed anymore. And in fact, to carry what you're saying a few steps further, all they have to do is, take the money out of your bank account. They don't even have to notify you.
Right. Right, exactly. But although somehow with parking tickets, that doesn't, I mean...
Well, these are traffic tickets, actually.
Traffic, whatever. I mean, we don't worry about... I mean, I personally think marijuana should be legal, but many of these kinds of things don't seem... In the case of marijuana, a person is doing something illegal. There's a statute that says you're not supposed to do that. It's legitimately passed, even if it's not a good statute. But the notion about the nature of the search aspect, where they find the evidence. But now, could you explain how that happens? They have a plane flying overhead, and they...
Well, according to the story, it was a question of power consumption. A particular kind of a lamp that's used for growing marijuana, or growing plants of any sort, really, but of course if you have this kind of lamp, well, maybe you have marijuana. That particular thing draws a certain amount of power, and only somebody who would have something along those lines in the thoughts of the power company would have that.
So the power company, or...
According to the article, okay, they...
Let's think about a telephone company. Can they report, just like, gee, this person makes a lot of calls to Miami?
Well, if you have an integrated network where every computer talks to every other computer, you could conceivably have a portrait drawn of you that says, well, you're this particular type of person. Even if you haven't already done it, you're the kind of person that will do it someday, so we might as well just prosecute you now and get it over with. But right now, according to this, it's because of the number of grow lamps in the guy's attic. It was the amount of what do they say here? An airborne infrared detector. That's what they use.
The notion, though, that you could use a utility, like I could subscribe to a newspaper and someone could get hold of my mailing, my subscription list and find out all the publications that I read. And they know that I read, let's suppose I read High Times. And then they said, and this person makes calls to, areas of the world where...
You would fit a certain profile.
...is grown or produced or heroin or something. And they put together these kinds of things by finding out things like what you subscribe to or utilities. That information, it can be given out without your consent and knowledge, I gather.
That's right. It happens all the time. And I think the best way to counter that...
Search warrant?
The best way to counter that... Well, it's done by organizations all the time. It's not done by governmental authorities. It's done by marketing firms. But the best way to fight that, I think, is to confuse the system and subscribe to things that, you wouldn't be expected to subscribe to. And, get numbers wrong, spell your name differently, things like that. Little individualistic flair there.
Well, I don't know that that solves anything.
It doesn't solve anything, but it does make the system work a little bit less conveniently, less perfectly. And I think a system like that working perfectly is a scary thing.
It doesn't really obstruct them. But it is true, though, that if they... The metaphor of the brainwaves is interesting, not only for the purposes of surveillance, but punishment. You could literally short-circuit the whole Constitution. They can just extract punishment. They never have to go to trial. The best you could do is somehow take the system to trial to try to prove that you're innocent by the preponderance of the evidence, instead of having to be proven guilty of a crime by beyond a reasonable doubt. So that in other words, that loophole you spoke of in that metaphor, when expanded to its reductio ad absurdum, more describes how the system functions. That's all I want to say.
Okay, well, thanks for saying it.
Bye-bye.
And it's too bad Franz Kafka isn't around to offer some comments on that. Good evening.
Yes, I'd like to speak to VAI on the air.
Well, you're talking to all the people in New York right now.
Okay. You're talking about the various scams by the telephone company, and I'm just curious as to whether other people they might be sensing something about a scam that I think I've sensed. The same month, my daughter and myself, at different locations, different phone numbers, had payments for our telephone bills that we mailed, not posted to our accounts until after they were theoretically overdue. And the delay was more than the usual postal delays for both of us. And I'm just wondering if the telephone company has decided to make a little bit of extra money by occasionally, in some pattern of their own, holding on to checks a little bit longer so they can extract the interest percentage.
Well, it's only recently. Are you in New York?
Yes, I am.
Okay, it's only recently that New York Telephone started charging a late charge for residential customers for not paying their bill on time. It's impossible to say if they're doing things intentionally or if it's a result of an accident or if it's a result of just ineptitude on their part. However, if you can prove that a certain piece of mail was mailed on a particular day, I really think that the onus is on them to prove that
they
got it.
They'll come through and they'll take it off. But in my mind, I wonder how many people bother with small figures that might not seem so significant. Say, well, why would you bother?
It's a good point. And also, you know, I think it ties into something else. The speed with which a company takes off a charge is directly proportional to how the number of people that don't bother to contest it. In other words, you call one of these long-distance companies that charges you $10 for a local call and you don't know that you're using them in the first place. You call them up and you say, hey, you know, I just got this phone bill, and they say, yeah, we'll take it off without even getting your name. They just know what you want right away. Now, they do that so quickly because they know that if people challenge them, they're going to lose. But so many people don't bother to challenge them, so that's why they survive.
I challenge to this on suspicion. Again, it's just a suspicion, but because of the coincidence or seeming coincidence, my challenge has been instead of mailing it now to put the costs on them for their agents out there who take the bills and charge no extra for payment, because I'm conveniently located with my work to a place where I can just take it in and pay it directly and have a stamp on there that says I paid it at that point in time.
Uh-huh. Well, I've heard that if you do that, if you go to a bank or something, it doesn't always work. I mean, yeah, you get that little stamp, but sometimes it shows up late anyway.
That's interesting.
Yeah. You're best off just paying it early. You know, get into the flow of it and just pay early.
Well, I believe in paying up the last minute. Let the load be in my account, not theirs.
Yeah, that's true, except when they have a late charge and they somehow wind up with the advantage even if you do it once. You know? Okay, well, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's see if we can fit in a couple more calls. Good evening. Anybody there? Okay, well, that makes it easy. Let's try this one. Good evening.
Yes. Okay, let me get this straight. If I call from a payphone in New York City,
yeah,
somebody who has caller ID, is there any way I can block them?
Is there any way you can block your number is what you're saying? No, you cannot block your number from showing up on caller ID.
If I'm calling from my home phone,
yeah,
I don't have any kind of caller ID service, and I call somebody with caller ID, is there any way I can block it?
Yes, there's two ways you can block it. You can tell the phone company you want it blocked all the time, and that means every time you make a phone call, it will show up as private number. Or, if you have not done this, then you have to dial *67 or 1167 before every number you call.
Well, wouldn't you recommend to 90% of the people out there who don't plan on buying to just call up the company and tell them they never want it?
Yes, that's what I do recommend. I recommend it to 100% of the people because I see no use for it.
I can't picture any situation where I would want the person to know. If I want them to know, I'll tell them.
Right, and if you want them to know, you can always dial *67 then, and it will send your number.
It would send them, right. Or, so I guess everybody should do that. Okay, but you can't block it from a payphone. Okay, one last question.
Yes.
When your readout, because I know you have it, when does it read out the person's number? During the ring or after you pick up?
It does it after the first ring, whether you pick up or not.
Whether you pick up or not.
In fact, what I was hoping to have for the show tonight, we'll have it in a couple of weeks, is an actual sound, you know, the sound of the data being sent. And maybe people out there can record it, decode it, and figure out ways of as to what exactly is being sent on there. But it's a little burst of data that comes directly after the first ring. And, you know, it's interesting. This is something I discovered, too. If you get a call on call waiting, and, you know, the call waiting call comes in, and you hang up your first call, your telephone will ring, and you will get a caller ID signal after the first audible ring of your telephone. In other words, it won't be lost when the first ring of the caller comes in on your call waiting.
Oh,
it's kind of hard to describe, but I think you understand.
Right. If a person set up their modem to ring like three-quarters of a ring, and then speed redial.
I don't think you can do that. Three-quarters of a ring?
You couldn't be done, right?
Well, I'm not sure, but if you set it up for one ring, it won't be sent. That much I do know.
Oh, it won't be sent.
If it picks up after the first ring, it probably won't be sent, no.
Oh, okay.
Or it'll be sent, but it won't be received.
Oh, one quick last thing.
Yeah.
I have this idea. For, like, picture two companies, one in L.A., one in New York, who constantly call each other. Well, the average long-distance rate might be, like, $2-3 or something. Why wouldn't those companies set up 800 numbers? Not that they advertise for customers to call, but just to call each other more inexpensively.
Yes, a lot of companies do that, in fact. However, after a long period of time, it doesn't pay off.
Does it?
The calls mount up. But, yeah, there's all kinds of different services. And, yeah, if you use calling cards or things like that, you're being ripped off, definitely.
Oh, okay, but you're saying if you can get special long-distance reduction rates if you keep calling the person all the time long-distance?
Yeah, there's all kinds of options.
That is lower than 800 service.
Yeah, there's all kinds of options.
Oh.
But we're out of time now, so we can't get into it, but keep thinking creatively because there are options out there. I guess that's kind of the theme of our program here. Well, that's all the time we have this week. Remember, next week we're not on the air at night, but we're on the air in the morning. Yes, from 9 in the morning until 12 noon. And that should be interesting. We're going to have all kinds of special things going on then. So tune in. Stay tuned for the news next here on WBAI New York. This is Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Hook and for Fiber Optic and all. Good night.
Good evening. In the news tonight, if U.S. troops head to Bosnia, will they have the blessings of the American public? Can progressive movements survive in Latin America in the aftermath of the Cold War? The lesbian and gay march goes to video, compliments of the Christian right. And in New York, civil liberties groups call for peace in the wake of bias incidents in Brooklyn. With these and other stories, I'm David Sears in New York with Verna Avery Brown in Washington, and this is the news for Wednesday, May 5th, 1993. First to Mark Bevis in Washington with these news briefs.
The world is waiting for the outcome of Bosnian Serb parliament deliberations on the Yugoslavian peace plan. Bosnian Serb leader Radovan Karadzic warned his parliament today that it had no choice but to sign the UN-sponsored pact to end the civil war. If it's rejected, Karadzic warned of catastrophic consequences. The parliament's expected to remain in deliberations behind closed doors until a vote is taken. Meanwhile, Western nations are still deciding how to react, and at the White House, President Clinton told reporters he's not yet made up his mind.
I hope they'll not only vote for it, I hope they'll observe it. It's two different issues. You know, we have to start our meeting here in a minute, but I think one of the things that we have to discuss is that we want an agreement in words and an agreement in fact. And that's what we've got to watch.
The president spent much of the morning in consultations with congressional leaders who voiced support for the administration. Senate Minority Leader Robert Dole of Kansas says there's no disagreement among the leadership.
There will be bipartisan support. There were a lot of questions asked. There are a lot of very difficult things we need to do. We need to prepare the American people. We need to define very carefully the national interest. But I think beyond that, we had a good briefing on the Christopher mission, and the president was good enough to consult with us again and indicates he'll continue it. We're thankful for that.
Secretary of State Warren Christopher is in Europe for consultations with allies on possible military action. So far, the allies have not agreed to use force against the Bosnian Serbs. But Russia told U.S. today it would send peacekeeping forces to Bosnia if the rebel Serbs accepted the peace plan. Meanwhile, at the United Nations, Secretary General Boutros Boutros-Ghali has proposed a working plan for a war crimes tribunal for human rights violations committed in the former Yugoslavia. Linda Fasulo reports.
In February, the Security Council decided to set up an international tribunal and ask the Secretary General to propose a plan. Now in his report, Boutros-Ghali is recommending that such a tribunal be located at The Hague, home of the World Court. The tribunal would be comprised of two trial chambers and a court of appeals. All persons accused of committing war crimes since January 1, 1991 could be tried. The Secretary General would nominate a prosecutor who would then be appointed by the Security Council. The 11 judges would be elected for four-year terms by the General Assembly and eligible for re-election. But the maximum penalty the tribunal could impose on criminals would be imprisonment. There would be no death penalty. For Pacifica, this is Linda Fasulo at the UN.
Israeli and Palestinian negotiators announced today in Washington they have some hope of reaching a declaration of principles on Palestinian self-rule. A working group on the idea of self-rule has been meeting every day this week to work on the principles, but both sides said there's no guarantee they would finish the document during this round. Meanwhile, Arab negotiators have decided to extend the current round of peace talks with Israel. The announcement was made late Tuesday night. President Clinton today welcomed home U.S. troops who'd been stationed in Somalia, and he presented their commander, Marine Lieutenant General Robert Johnston, the Distinguished Service Medal.
On behalf of all the American people, I say to you, General, and all of them you brought with you, welcome home, and thank you for a job very, very well done.
Of the 25,800 troops sent to Somalia back in January, about 5,000 remain. Most of those will be part of a peacekeeping force headed by the United Nations. At the White House ceremony this morning, however, President Clinton noted that for the military, quote, other missions lie ahead. Khmer Rouge guerrillas have attacked a Chinese army unit in central Cambodia. In its first attack on its once allied Chinese forces, the Khmer Rouge shelled a base in Kompong Tom province Tuesday night. No one was injured, although some 200 UN peacekeepers were stationed at the facility at the time of the attack. And finally, Irving Howe, writer, critic, and a leading member of the New York literary scene, died today after a stroke suffered last night. Howe's best-known book was World of Our Fathers, a social and cultural history of East European Jews in America. It won the National Book Award in 1977. Howe was 72. And those are the headlines. I'm Mark Beavis.
Once again, the nation is poised for military intervention abroad, this time in the tiny Balkan state of Bosnia. The Bosnian Serbs debated the proposed peace plan as the U.S. geared up for military action. The Russians say they'll commit troops to a peacekeeping mission. U.S. forces are reported to be stockpiling supplies just in case their troops are sent to the Balkans. And back home, top congressional leaders met with the president at the White House to discuss the latest plans. But all the talk for the need to intercede militarily has not been reflected.